Welcome to Learning English, a daily 30-minute program from the Voice of America. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson. This program is aimed at English learners, so we speak a little slower, and we use words and phrases, especially written, for people learning English.
Today on the program, you will hear stories from Kelly Jean Kelly and Alice Bryant. Later, we will present our American history series, The Making of a Nation. But first, former cricket star Imran Khan has declared victory for his political party in Pakistan's general elections. Pakistani television stations say Khan's PTI party has a commanding lead in the voting. But the National Election Commission has yet to release official results. Khan, who hopes to be Pakistan's next prime minister, said in a statement, "Thanks to God, we won and we were successful." His supporters celebrated outside party offices across the country. Many of them were young men who danced to the sound of beating drums covered in the PTI's black and green colored flags. Khan's message of a new Pakistan appealed to young voters in Pakistan, a country where the United Nations says 64% of its people are below the age of 30. At least 10 television stations in Pakistan reported that the PTI won as many as 119 of the 270 contested seats in the National Assembly. The 342-seat assembly has seats reserved for women and minorities. Khan's leading opponent, Shahbaz Sharif of the Pakistan Muslim League, rejected the election results as the votes were being counted. Sharif wrote on Twitter that had the public mandate been delivered in a fair manner, we would have accepted it happily. The Independent Human Rights Commission reported that in some places, women were not permitted to vote. In other areas, it said polling staff appeared to be biased toward a certain party, without naming the party. In the days before the elections, rights activist I.A. Rehman called the campaign the dirtiest in Pakistan's push toward democracy. The vote was held on Wednesday. The same day, a suicide bomber attacked a voting station in Quetta, the capital of Balochistan province. 31 people were killed.
Marie Kondo is an internationally known expert on cleaning. Her first book, called The Life-Changing Magic of Tidying Up, was published in Japanese in 2011. It has sold more than 10 million copies in more than 40 countries. Yet, fans want more help and information. So Kondo is launching a television show, a team of workers who will visit clients' homes, and a set of special paper boxes to keep things organized. A set of three costs $89. Kondo says the boxes were not part of her original idea. In her book about tidying up, she gave two main pieces of advice. First, keep only things that give you joy. Second, store those things in places they can be easily reached and put away. Kondo did not tell readers to get special containers for their things. Instead, she suggested people use containers they already had, such as shoeboxes. But fans still ask Kondo what kinds of containers they need to achieve her special way of organizing. So Kondo recently appeared in New York City to launch her new boxes. They are about the shape and size of shoeboxes. They are colored light pink, gray, brown, and purple. The insides are painted with designs, such as a tree branch dotted with small white flowers. Kondo says, "The idea behind the boxes is not to hide things. Instead, it is to make the things inside feel happy." She recommends using them for glasses, bags, papers, socks, and t-shirts. "I'm probably the only person in the world who makes such an official occasion to introduce empty boxes," Kondo noted to the reporters who had come for her announcement. In addition to helping people tidy up, the boxes will also likely increase Kondo's earnings and impact. In 2015, Time magazine called her one of the year's most influential people. And since the life-changing magic of tidying up, she has written three other books and is planning a new one about organizing the workplace. She has also had two children, girls ages 3 and almost 2. Kondo admits that raising a family can be challenging, but she says organizing has been her passion since she was 5 years old. Now she is teaching her children to do it. When Kondo folds clothes, she says, she hopes her daughters watch. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
In English, the traditional word order of a statement is subject plus verb. Never do we change the order except when asking a question. Or do we? If you listened closely, you may have noticed that my statement beginning with the word never failed to follow the usual order. I put the auxiliary verb do before the subject, you, and the main verb know after the subject. Using this word order in statements is called inversion. We use inversion to add emphasis to statements and variety to our writing. Inversion can make our sentences sound surprising or striking or unusual, writes Shona Beckwith. She is founder of the website PerfectEnglishGrammar.com. But inversion is not for everyday speech. English speakers use it in formal statements and most often in writing, such as in essays and works of literature. And it is only done with some words and phrases. There are more than 15 types of inversion, but only some are used in academic writing. Today, we will show you how to use a few types. When used the right way, inversion can strengthen points and make your writing more memorable. Another reason for learning inversion is that examples appear on the TOEFL, or Test of English as a Foreign Language. Getting word order right in inversion is important, so let's start there. There are two ideas worth remembering. The first is that many types of inversion use the auxiliary verb plus subject plus main verb word order. Auxiliary verbs, such as be, do, and have, are verbs that help form a verb tense, mood, or voice of main verbs. The second is that inversion usually puts the thing we want to emphasize at the beginning of the sentence. One example might be the adverb never in my earlier statement. One type of inversion common both in academic writing and on the TOEFL is starting a statement with the past participle. In this inversion, the word order is past participle plus be plus the subject. Listen to the following reading about television viewership in the United States. Then try to find the inversion.
Gone are the days when American families would gather around a television program at its scheduled time. Today's viewers want to watch their programs on demand, and they often binge watch whole series, whether on cable TV or the internet.
Did you find the inversion? It begins with the word gone. But that statement has more than one clause in it, which is very common in English. Gone are the days is the main clause. The other is a relative clause, when American families would gather around a television program at its scheduled time. Notice that the relative clause does not use inversion. That is important. Often statements that use inversion contain more than one clause, and only one of the clauses contains inversion. You will also notice that there was only one inversion in the example. Inversion is something that you should avoid overusing. Now, let's move to inversions involving a negative word or phrase. These are very common in essay writing and on the TOEFL. For these, the negative word or term almost always begins the statement. Think back to my statement with the negative adverb never. In addition to never, you can use inversion with the adverbs rarely, seldom, hardly, and scarcely. Listen to the following sentence, a factual statement one might find in an essay.
Punishment is rarely severe for attackers who are found guilty.
It is a well-written statement that does not use inversion. But if we wanted to note how rare it is for attackers to be punished severely, we could move the negative adverb rarely. Listen for the inversion in this reworded statement.
Rarely is punishment severe for attackers who are found guilty.
Putting rarely first makes the point more striking. Notice also that there are two clauses in this statement, and the relative clause, who are found guilty, does not use inversion. In addition to negative adverbs, there are also many negative phrases that use inversion. Some examples are phrases like not only but also, not until, and not since. Unlike for negative adverbs, which can go anywhere in a sentence, for some negative phrases, inversion is a requirement, not a choice. Now let's look at not only but also. It often uses inversion, but that is only required when the not only part begins the statement. Using not only but also shows that something has more than one quality or has done more than one action, where the action or quality after but also is especially notable. In academic writing, this phrase can be effective for making an argument. Here's an example in a persuasive essay about automobiles.
There are a number of advantages to owning a hybrid car. Not only do hybrids run cleaner than gasoline, but they also have better gas mileage. And those are just the environmental benefits. Other benefits, such as tax credits and a higher resale value, are financial.
The statement with not only but also uses inversion in the first clause. Not only do hybrids run cleaner than gasoline, and it follows the auxiliary verb plus subject plus main verb construction. The negative phrase, not only, appears first, followed by do, then the subject, hybrid cars, then the main verb, run. In the second clause, which has but also, there is no inversion. This is the structure to follow when using inversion for not only but also. I'm Alice Bryant.
Welcome to The Making of a Nation, American History in VOA Special English. I'm Steve Ember. We continue the story of America's 33rd president, Harry Truman. Truman was sometimes called an accidental president. He only became president because he was vice president when Franklin Roosevelt died in 1945. In the election of 1948, Truman ran for a full term. As we told you last week, many experts predicted he would lose. But voters chose him over the Republican Party candidate, Thomas E. Dewey, the governor of New York. Americans also elected a Congress with a majority from Truman's Democratic Party. The president might have expected a Congress led by his own party to support his policies, but that did not always happen. Time after time, Democrats from southern states joined in voting with conservative Republicans. Together, these lawmakers defeated some of Truman's most important proposals. One of the defeated bills was a proposal for health care insurance for every American. One of the major issues during Truman's second term was fear of communism. After World War II, Americans watched as one Eastern European nation after another became an ally of the Soviet Union. Soviet leader Joseph Stalin wanted to see communism spread around the world. And Americans watched as China became communist in 1949, as forces led by Mao Zedong defeated the Chinese nationalists after a civil war that had lasted more than 10 years. During this tense period, there were charges that communists held important jobs in the United States government. These fears, real or imagined, became known as the Red Scare.
Even if there were only one communist in the State Department, that would still be one communist too many.
A Republican senator from Wisconsin, Joseph McCarthy, led the search for communists in America. In speeches and congressional hearings, he accused hundreds of people of being communists or communist supporters. His targets included the State Department, the Army, and the entertainment industry. Senator McCarthy often had little evidence to support his accusations. Many of his charges would not have been accepted in a court of law. But the rules governing congressional hearings were different, so he was able to make his accusations freely. Many people lost their jobs after they were denounced as communists. Some had to use false names to get work. A few went to jail briefly for refusing to cooperate with McCarthy. The senator continued his anti-communist investigations for several years. By the early 1950s, however, more people began to question his methods. Critics said he violated democratic traditions. In 1954, the Senate finally voted to condemn his actions. McCarthy died 3 years later. There were problems caused by the fear of communists at home. But President Truman also had to deal with the threat of communism in other countries. He agreed to send American aid to Greece and Turkey. He also supported continuing the Marshall Plan. That was the huge economic aid program that helped rebuild Western Europe after World War II. Many historians say the Marshall Plan prevented Western Europe from becoming communist. The defense of Western Europe against Soviet communism led Truman to support the creation of the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. NATO began in 1949 with the United States, Britain, Canada, France, and 8 other nations. The treaty that created NATO stated that a military attack on any member would be considered an attack on all of them. Truman named General Dwight Eisenhower to command the new organization. General Eisenhower had been supreme commander of Allied forces in Europe in World War II. In his swearing-in speech in 1949, Truman urged the United States to lend money to other countries to aid their development. He also wanted to share American science and technology. In 1951, the president asked Congress to establish a new foreign aid program. The aid would go to countries threatened by communist forces in Europe, the Middle East, North Africa, East Asia, South Asia, and Latin America. Truman believed the United States would be stronger if its allies were stronger. President Truman believed that many of the world's problems could be settled by means other than military force. But he supported and used military power throughout his presidency. On June 25, 1950, forces from North Korea invaded South Korea. 2 days later, the United Nations Security Council approved a resolution urging UN members to help South Korea resist the invasion. At first, President Truman agreed to send American planes and ships. Later, he agreed to send American ground forces. The president knew his decision could start World War III if the Soviet Union entered the war on the side of communist North Korea. Yet he felt the United States had to act. Later, he said it was the most difficult decision he made as president. Truman named Army General Douglas MacArthur to command all United Nations forces in South Korea. Most of the fighting in the Korean War took place along the geographic line known as the 38th parallel. This line formed the border between North and South Korea. Many victories on the battlefield were only temporary. One side would capture a hill, then the other side would recapture it. In September of 1950, MacArthur led the UN land and sea attack at Incheon, pushing the North Koreans back across the border. There was hope that the war could end by Christmas, December 25th. In late November, however, troops from China joined the North Koreans. Thousands of Chinese soldiers helped push the UN troops south. General MacArthur wanted to attack Chinese bases in Manchuria. President Truman said no. He did not want the fighting to spread beyond the Korean Peninsula. Again, he feared that such a decision could start another world war. MacArthur strongly believed he could end the war quickly by extending it to the Chinese mainland. He publicly denounced Truman's policy, saying, "There is no substitute for victory." Truman felt that the general left him no choice. In April of 1951, he dismissed MacArthur.
"It was with the deepest personal regret that I found myself compelled to take this action. General MacArthur is one of our greatest military commanders, but the cause of world peace is much more important than any individual."
In the United States, military leaders are expected to obey their commander-in-chief, the president. While some Americans approved of the general's dismissal, many others supported MacArthur. Millions greeted him when he returned to the United States. There were huge parades in his honor in San Francisco and New York. In fact, few leaders in the 20th century could boast the support MacArthur had. Almost 7 million people attended the ticker tape parade given to him by New York City. And that almost doubled the size of the one given to another returning World War II hero, General Dwight Eisenhower. MacArthur gave his farewell speech to a joint session of Congress on April 19, 1951.
"I am closing my 52 years of military service. When I joined the Army, even before the turn of the century, it was the fulfillment of all my boyish hopes and dreams. The world has turned over many times since I took the oath on the plain at West Point, and the hopes and dreams have long since vanished. But I still remember the refrain of one of the most popular barrack ballads of that day, which proclaimed most proudly that old soldiers never die. They just fade away. And like the old soldier of that ballad, I now close my military career and just fade away. An old soldier who tried to do his duty as God gave him the light to see that duty. Goodbye."
On the Korean Peninsula, the war continued. Ceasefire talks began in July of 1951, but the conflict would last for another 2 years until a truce was declared. The Korean War Armistice Agreement was signed on July 27, 1953.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow to learn English through stories from around the world. I'm Jonathan Evans.
And I'm Ashley Thompson.